I regret to tell you that the Milwaukee mile is actually 1.015 miles. I know, you're devastated. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. No, really. The real tragedy is we were gone for over a week. But hello, everybody. It's episode 539 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and a genuine pleasure for you to invite us back into your homes, your mobiles, your daily runs, and your TV sets, because it has been a little while, to say the least, mostly because literally two-thirds of our regular gang, and even one from our bonus crew, were a little bit busy this past weekend, and we just thought, well, let's just let him cook for a little bit. But we're glad to announce we are now back, and we have four people on this edition of the show in what I like to call the catch-up trilogy. We'll be doing a little bit of that over the next three episodes. We'll be catching you up with, well, not so much MotoGP, because we did kind of address Austria, or the lack of it, so to speak, on two wheels. For IndyCar and Formula One, we'll be going for a little bit of a catch-up, but also, as well as this past weekend's action. So let's go around the horn real quick. RJ says, I've now apparently become a teacher, according to this script, so I will atone us from the top, saying, quote, all right, class, I'm Professor Harrison, and as we're coming back to school, I thought it'd be good to get to know my students for this semester by asking them about what they did over the summer holiday. So, Cam and Ryan Eric King, where did you go on your summer break?
Well, we went to Milwaukee.
But first, I went to Indiana to hang out with Krista Hardy.
That's Krista Hardy, semi-regular guest on the show, contributed for frontstretch.com, and a good friend of the show. What was that experience like, Cam?
You know, had some good times, had some bad times. Sadly, I didn't get a picture in his house brandishing an axe.
Nah.
But generally,
we were so disappointed.
I know. Unfortunately, I had to leave him alive because I forgot my hat at his house, so he's mailing that back to me.
Leave behind?
I happened to buy an Alex Palou hat while I was in Milwaukee, which I had on along with my Alex Palou shirt and my Alex Palou diecast, which got signed.
You lucky bastard.
I didn't feel lucky at the time.
No.
We're going to talk about... neither did feel lucky for Alex, because I did get to talk to him for a good half a minute. Incredibly nice man. I wish I could have talked to him on a better day, though.
I know, right? Like, you don't want to catch someone you like on a bad day. You know, with Alex Palou, he has so few of them these days. But
he saved the one for me being in the stands in my Alex Palou gear.
Of course. Like, that is motorsport for you. It will find the most unique and devastating time to fuck with him. Also, I know the real reason he kept the Hardy alive, and that was because he gave you root beer and you fell in love with it. We all saw the footage.
I need you to understand, friends of the show, if you go to Indianapolis, if you go to Speedway, you go to the Mug and Bun and you get a large homemade root beer, it'll change your life.
I just saw your eyes light up. It was like Boston had won the championship again.
This is better.
Oh my god, you take that back.
No,
I
this you, is better.
You stunted on this show for 2 weeks about the Celtics winning those
finals. I could You're stunt for a month about this root beer.
It could feed families, etc.
Really, I mean, the first thing that Krista Hardy brought me to was a place called Barbecue and Bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much set the tone for the week.
I was that's so jealous of you motherfuckers, because like, mm-hmm. that place I went, that was like one of the first places I went to when I went to Indianapolis as an adult. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. Also, I love that Kira, who's one of our Discord members and Patreon backers, hi Kira, is in our chat, and they said, he has never sounded more New England in his life, my god. And I was like, yep, that's in one. King, how was Milwaukee for you, my friend?
It was good, it was the same, it was a wondrous adventure into the Midwest, which... I love the Milwaukee Mile. Fun track. Though I'd say that one, MJF's description of the Midwest is fairly apt.
Now, which MJF description was that for all those non-AEW fans out there?
It's not one of those things that's like borderline blatant racism being screamed into a microphone on
AEW television. Oh, good, good. I'm not sure that's the wisest thing to put out on a Pokemotoring podcast, but here we are.
I just say, you know, great people in the Midwest, fine people in the Midwest. So, no, they should just have higher standards for themselves. That's all I'm saying.
I would concur with that.
Okay. We'll save that one for the post-podcast discussion. But, well, Klaus, let's settle in. Because let's be real, between the four of us, we have a pretty good finger on the pulse of IndyCar in this, as we go into this final semester. And yes, Cam.
Sorry, I'm raising my hand in the class. For a portion of this week, what pulse?
Well, yeah,
it felt like we were all in the waiting room, and Dr. Mark Miles was coming out of the OR saying, "Hey guys, it's not looking great." I don't.
it's like yeah, I'm gonna be real. Like you wouldn't get that on House, would you? Or Grey's Anatomy. He's like, no, like my chief, it ain't looking great. So now, before we get into some of the nitty-gritty and some of the back and forth between its most popular driver and the CEO, which, you know, is another great sign for this series' PR, which has not taken half a dozen whacks this year as it is, because you were actually there, King and Cam, I'll go to you on this sort of first, King, because I know you're slightly more hinged than Cam is. What did you make of the event in general?
Friday was not promising. If you showed up for practice, you would believe everything that was being said online, that it was turnout was gonna be bleak. But to the surprise of everybody, things turned around for Saturday and Sunday, thankfully. But it feels like the Wisconsin State Fair and IndyCar itself wasn't prepared for how many people came out to the track on Saturday and Sunday. The event felt very understaffed.
Ooh, that's never
wrong. Yeah, like, to get, basically, for a little bit of perspective here, to get from the infield to the grandstands and the fan area was about maybe 3.5 to 4 feet wide.
Oh, ooh, that's all good.
Well, that they couldn't change that for the race. They could. But I think the bigger issue was to get into the garage area. You have to go through security, and it felt like they only had like two people to get everyone through security. So that line ended up stretching through that tunnel.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
I think that's the greater problem here.
Yeah.
I would like to describe this weekend as everything absolutely great and absolutely bafflingly stupid about IndyCar all rolled up into one neat little package.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll go to you for this one then, Cam. What did you make of the racing in general? And you were there for both races as well. From what I could see on TV, the action was pretty great.
I would say it kind of ramped up over the course of a couple of days. They had this initial practice to basically mandate that teams would run the bottom line to rubber in that line and create multi-lane racing. And I would say that ramped up over the course of the first race. The first half of the first race was pretty single file at times, but the second half and then the second race were fantastic. Watching from the stands, lots of, it wasn't easy to pass, but it wasn't difficult either. It was the really good balance. Of course, we also had a new rule this weekend, courtesy of our friend Joseph Newgarden, who, how would we describe how his weekend went?
Terrible. No good.
An instant comeuppance.
This lightning bolt struck the front end kind of bad. Yeah, that kind of horrible, no good, dreadful weekend. Yes. We'll get into a little bit.
Outside of him, I mean, really, it was pretty clean. Hard but fair racing.
I'd say so. Yeah, yeah. I think most of the incidents, if there was any, were coincidental. I mean, I know Graham Rahal was very harsh on Christian Rasmussen, but I'm not sure what Christian was supposed to do in that scenario.
Christian did spend a fair portion of that second race as a rolling chicane.
He did, bless his heart. You know, the nature of driving for Ed Carpenter. Sometimes that's just the way it goes. But yes, Ed actually gave up his oval ride so that Rasmussen can get the rest of the year. Ed finally did the right thing and stepped down. Might be a bit late for that, though. We'll get into why later on in the show if you look at the scoreboard. More on that in a bit. But we'll get into a little bit of the Milwaukee discussion now, but as said, this is a little bit of a catch-up, so a quick catch-up on what happened in Portland, or as we like to call it, on the last episode of Indy Ball Z. Santino Ferrucci stunned the paddock at Portland International Raceway and gave AJ Foyt its first pole position since Takuma Sato in Detroit in 2014. Let's just say the room was split that day on that one when Ferrucci got that pole position, to say the least, only for Willpower to immediately bump him off at the first corner of the first lap of the actual race itself. My man went from "Congrats, I hope you were using my setup," to running him partly off the road on the first corner of the race. That's just Willpower for you at this point. And then lead 101 on brand out of 110 laps on the way to his third win of the season, completely dominated pretty much from start to finish. It was a huge three-pointer to cut the lead down to 54 points, as Alex Palou finished second, the only driver in his postcode all day. Scott Dixon's title hopes completely shattered off the side of Pietro Fittipaldi's car, and bad Romain Grosjean made a cameo appearance because he couldn't rejoin a track properly.
He failed to rejoin twice in the space of about 10 seconds.
Yeah, it was not great.
I'll be real with y'all, because this was a race I did actually watch without being like caught up in work. My other job, which I'll talk about more in our next episode. But me and friend of the podcast, Remy Connors, watched it together. We watched it at their place. And I'm going to be real. This was a very professional demolition job from Will Power. And I didn't really get a whole lot else out of that other than that.
Nope. No, you just title it like Chris Paul hits a huge three to cut the lead to 42.
Yeah, that's pretty much what that race was. It was Power, like Palou was close for the first three quarters of this race, but every time he tried an undercut or an overcut attempt, his pit crew screwed it up.
Even then, given the lack of fresh reds versus Power's fresh reds for the final stint, it was always borrowed time. If Palou couldn't get ahead and pull a gap, because he seemed faster for a good portion of the race, but Power bolted on those fresh reds and took off.
Yeah, final stint, nothing Palou could do.
It didn't really matter a whole lot in the grand scheme of the points.
No, it did not. Power took 10 points out of Palou's gap, and that was pretty much the end of the matter. So, what happened next is IndyCar ventures back to the Milwaukee Mile for the first time since 2015.
Again, the vibes were not great because Battle Ward got into it with IndyCar CEO Mark Michaels over the series poor marketing on the topics. Miles himself said in a pre-race interview that 15,000 fans would be an adequate return to the track. As a point of reference, the Milwaukee Mile's official listed capacity is about 35,000. And Pato said that, and Miles said that Mexico looked down on the series as to why they didn't get a race there, with drivers showing frustration over NASCAR beating them to the punch. Because in another story, NASCAR released the 2025 Cup Series schedule. Mexico City, Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez, has a points-paying race on the calendar. Mm-hmm. IndyCar, which has been reportedly chasing down an international date for over a decade since the departure of Surfers Paradise, and if you don't count Indy Toronto, they do not. They don't have a date in Mexico City. So
yeah, because we all know that Canada is discount America.
Sweet apartment over the meth lab, as we were.
Dre, there was a lot to get. What did you make of the argument? Although I think more appropriately, this should be titled, what did you think of the 48-hour evisceration of Mark Miles on the timelines of the social media of your choice? Because that's what that felt like. This did not feel like an argument. This felt like a one-sided verbal ass beating.
Yeah, like my first thought when I was reading this go down was, oh, dinner. Feeding frenzy over here on the corpse of Mark Miles, because this was brutal. This as Red Eye used to say, this was brutal, savage, wrecked, absolutely taken down, etc. Because, yeah, like this, we haven't quite fully amassed all of Mark Miles' comments, because the one that ticked off a lot of fans and a lot of people on the socials, including Pado himself, was, quote, I will say that it's clear that Pado isn't as famous as the last previously famous Mexican driver, Adrian Fernandez, but he's really gaining ground and he's actually on some billboards now. And then Pado immediately clapped back with, you know who isn't on a billboard in the local area? Me, because the billboards were advertising NASCAR's Truck Series race that had already happened there the week before. Not good. Not good. And to be fair, Pado wasn't the only one. I know Scott Dixon said it was a massive miss that they were not going to have a race in Mexico City. And Alex Palou, who is normally, as we all know, the nicest man in the world and would never rock the boat that hard, said, quote, we're being overtaken left and right, which is about as near as to a damnation as you'll ever get from Alex Palou on just about anything, really. And as Jason points out in our chat as well, we didn't even mention the fact that Jenna Fryer for the Associated Press had to put out a thread that said that Ricardo Juncos was claiming he had the exclusive rights to IndyCar in all of Latin America and thought that he was a proxy to negotiate on the series' behalf. What the hell is going on here?
Now, this is like, now if I had a nickel for every time Dre Harrison had a breakdown over a institutional failure within an IndyCar series entity that was put out by Jenna Fryer on this podcast, I'd have two nickels. You know the rest.
I feel like we would have like four or five nickels at this point.
There's so much to unpack here. First, man, Adrian Fernandez does not deserve to be catching these strays. No.
Like, my man never asked for this. Why? My man never asked for this. Like,
I'm gonna be honest here. The comment saying that Pato Award isn't as famous in Mexico as Adrian Fernandez is true. Like, that's undeniably true, but it also misses the point.
Guys. When was the last time Adrian Fernandez ran a American open wheeler?
2004 was the last time, I believe. It was 04 or 05. During the split.
It was 04.
During Kart's heyday, and when Kart at the time was pulling as much of an audience as F1 was.
Maybe not in 2004.
Because, yeah, but the comment that Pato Award isn't as famous as Adrian Fernandez is less of a comment about those two drivers and more of a comment about the state of the series.
Yeah, like, right. Yeah, Mark, look Miles, at where we've brought the series over the last 20 years. We're down. So much less popular than we used to be.
Down. This is anti-stonks. This is reverse stonks right now. And yes, okay, Pato might not be as famous as Adrian Fernandez, but there's a couple of reasons for that. One, the series was as a whole more popular back then. And two, well, let's not forget here, Pato Award has more Instagram followers than IndyCar itself.
Yeah, like, the fact that Pato Award isn't as popular as Adrian Fernandez is not Pato's fault.
It's a damning indictment on the series.
Yeah.
We were boots on the ground. Like, there was no driver who got more cheers every time that he was introduced than Pato Award.
Okay, the on-the-ground thing, got thrown out the window. If you were willing to pay to go to Milwaukee this past weekend, you were a diehard IndyCar fan. There were barely any casuals there. If there was a casual, they were brought in by someone who was devoted to IndyCar.
Right, and the point is, you guys hung out with Chris DeHardy, and Chris went semi-viral in racing circles on social media for putting out this tweet that I had saved on my computer just in case, where it says, quote, "My friend booked the Airbnb for the Milwaukee race weekend that the four of us will share. Our host for this weekend for all of us were in town to see the Milwaukee Brewers, the baseball side, play. He had no idea that IndyCar were racing only a few miles away. This was now, not for the Sea Hopper."
Yeah, it's me. I'm friend.
yeah, I was one of the four, and it didn't get much better basically anytime we asked someone in the area, because they're just like, yeah, we saw a commercial or two, but that's about it.
Because like the thing is, it's not that there's no advertising, it's just simply people don't care.
And it sucks that this has got to run through Pato, because he's not the only one that's had to say it. I know many of his fellow colleagues and other drivers have all backed this up. Pato O'Ward is by a country mile the most popular driver in this series now. And this is a guy that actually thinks outside of the box and tries to come up with ways to get fans to show up to these events. It's been well documented about how you can buy tickets for race events if you buy from his merchandise store. He's done numerous meet and greets and having his own grandstand at certain race events in years past. He's gone on other people's podcasts talking about how they can promote the series. Hi, Liz. Et cetera. This is the guy that has pushed harder than anyone else as a driver in terms of popularity in the series and how to try and convert that into gaining and growing the series and growing fans. He's been extremely vocal and passionate about that over the last several years in IndyCar. And I feel bad for the man, because it's like Mark Mars accidentally lobbed the grenade in his general direction when he's the one that's done more for this series in terms of trying to get people through the door than arguably the series itself has done in recent years. Because we've been critical, massively critical, of IndyCar, and I say marketing department here loosely and with severe optimism, because this series has obviously not been as popular as what it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. But just in
certainly
terms
not pre-split. Like pre-split, up going up into like the late, early to mid 90s, like we were like, there were discussions of just like, is the PPG IndyCar World Series about to overtake the Formula One World Championships in terms of worldwide popularity? And granted, I think a lot of that also had to do with the fact that you had guys like Fittipaldi, Mansell racing in the series, guys that appeal from overseas. The ship is good.
Look, it just felt to me, and I put it in the script here, it felt like when John Cena came back as a part-time wrestler to a still green Roman Reigns, and he absolutely verbally eviscerated him on the mic, and he goes, yeah, okay, I'm back here because you failed. I'm here because you can't do your job.
It's all promo, kid. If you're going to be the big dog, you got to learn to do one.
And that's kind of what this felt like, because it was like, Pato had receipts, and look, Mark Mars was never going to win a popularity contest on social media. That's a given. And this year, as I said before, has not been a good year for IndyCar when it comes to vibes. The vibes are down. The vibes are low. They're not great. But when you've got people like Alex Rossi and Felix Rosenquist and Alex Palou all highlight just how popular this dude is and how much the overall unanimous feeling is that the ball has been dropped here, in a weekend where your own CEO is lowballing your attendance and saying 15K in a 35K facility is good. I mean, don't get me wrong. Luckily, more people did roll up over the weekend, and I'm glad people did. But man, like going into that when the vibes were already cautious and bad, it was just a bad look for everybody involved. It just apart from Pato, of course.
But like, it doesn't inspire confidence in that things are working, which stinks, because I want this revival in the Milwaukee Mile to do well, because There is a lot of history at this venue. This is the oldest paved oval in the United States. Predates the Brickyard. Predates
It's the oldest racing venue in the world.
This venue was off the calendar for NASCAR and IndyCar for several years. There were talks that they were going to tear this place down. I don't want this event just to come and go and this venue to be turned into a freaking apartment complex or an Amazon distribution center. I don't want that.
After the weekend, pretty much like this place is going to be around for a long time. Even Scott Dixon mentioned it in the closing press conference where they pulled 20,000 people for both days of a doubleheader. So 20,000 on Saturday, 20,000 on Sunday. And that's difficult to do for a doubleheader to get people to come back or fill up those seats on different days. And this initial 2-year deal has already been extended out to 3 years. And the next 2 years are one race day, meaning that it's going to be far easier to do what they did this past year, the next couple of years.
I hope they can get all 35,000 or so seats untarped and full. I hope so too.
I mean, I can understand why they lowballed it on the way in. It was the first time they'd done this race in 9 years. I'm genuinely delighted that they got a decent number to get in there for 2 days, especially for a Saturday. That's no guarantee. Yeah, Saturday, a lot of people like to chill. Sunday is the traditional race day for most racing series. So I'm glad they were able to basically get 40,000 over those 2 days, plus whoever rolled up on Friday. Not many, apparently, but still they count. And yeah, going down to one race day, I mean, going straight back in with a doubleheader, I always thought was ambitious. This makes a lot more sense that for the next 2 years, it will be just a single race day.
We should point out it was only a doubleheader because the race in Argentina never happened.
I mean, why not? What happened there? what's that? President Milei again? That's right, the butcher. Yeah, that's the one.
Butchering that inflation rate.
That's never been bigger, baby. Oh boy, the numbers.
They want to cut that down.
Oh yeah, the numbers go up faster than a Balotro run. Don't worry about that.
This will not be the first Balotro mentioned during this recording. I almost guarantee it.
Absolutely.
I think all of this is what made it so satisfying on Saturday that Pato O'Ward won. Pato O'Ward won the race.
How's that for making a statement?
That was his "Do I have your attention now?" moments.
Pato who?
Pato who? Yeah, Pato O'Ward pretty much dominating the back end of race one. I mean, the Penske's both split pole positions. McLaughlin was on pole for race one. Newgarden on pole for race two. Remember that. It becomes important later. But it was Pato O'Ward who came through in the second half of the race. Will Power tried and swung and tried to stick around in the late going, but Pato was just better through traffic and ultimately had 133 laps and won the race. We got to mention a couple of these other little stories before we talk a little bit more about Pato here, because you know he was third in this race? Connor fucking Daly. The man who probably put his own name in Twitter to figure out the result that he ended up with. Third place, Juncos' highest ever finish. Their first ever podium in IndyCar, and it came from the substitute teacher, the driver for hire.
We should also point out, he passed 50 cars, well, over 50 cars to do it.
Yeah. He started 25th on the grid. He started 25th on the grid, worked his way up, got to the midfield, and then a late caution, which, well, let's talk about that late caution. It was if you could guess one man in the IndyCar paddock who would have a loose tire fall off their car in a bad pit stop, any guesses?
Oh boy, I can't wait to win this race with my dominating pace. Boy, fuck you! Yeah, that's right. It's Colton Herta.
I think Who was it? Was it Fred that put out the tweet that was just like, I saw a loose wheel on track and said, that's Colt Herta before the show Colt Herta's off.
We just knew the moment was like, because we saw it, all we saw on camera for the first 10, 15 seconds when the caution came out was this loose tire floating around. I'm like, okay, cool, caution, whatever. Whose tire is that though?
And then I was in the stand sitting next to Sarah, Krista Hardy's wife, who is the biggest Andretti Autosport fan you'll ever meet.
Oh no.
Devastation. No. Pain. Agony.
It was Colton. He's like, they just cut for 15 seconds later. They didn't then just cut to Colton Herta with three wheels on his wagon. And I'm like, of course it was. Again. And that not only pretty much ended Connor, who was running third, I think, at the time, and denied him a shot at his first oval win. It pretty much ended his entire championship campaign almost right there and then, because he not only did he have to take an emergency service, then get a drive-through penalty for taking said emergency service in a closed pit. Then he got a 30-second stop-and-hold penalty because of the dangerous pit stop.
When it rains, it pours. And when it pours, it hails.
Yeah, this is why in the Premier League we don't do red cards for dangerous fouls in the box anymore, because of the triple whammy rule. And unfortunately, Colton Herta ended up four laps down and inevitably in 22nd place. But it was Palo's day, King, and I know you were there for the podium celebration and then for the post-race press conference as well. Man was stunting.
Oh, everyone was happy to be on that podium on Saturday.
I got to watch. We hooked up the laptop to the TV in the Airbnb and rewatched this press conference. It is some of the most unhinged shit I have ever seen.
Tell us more, Cam, because we watched it in full. I actually haven't had the luxury of being able to do that yet.
Oh, it's just roasts. Roasts and cream puffs all around. That was the post-race this weekend.
Oh,
King was there. King was in the room.
Yes, I was in the room. I would have taken notes if I knew we were going to talk about this, but yes, jabs were thrown at management without directly naming anybody, because no one wants to get in serious trouble.
No one wants to put the series in disrepute, but it kind of says it all when Pato O'Ward rolls up with his feet on the desk in the presser while wearing a sombrero you can buy from his own merch stand. the personal merch stand, because the one he normally has for IndyCar's default weekends was already sold out. Cha-ching, etc. Yeah, Pato stunted on these hoes, and rightly so. His third win of the year. Personal best for most wins he's had in an IndyCar season to date.
I got the transcript of the whole thing. Will Power, quote, "We should be in Mexico City, not NASCAR." Pato O'Ward, what? Will Power, I say we should be in Mexico City. Pato O'Ward, Pato who? I'm surprised they left this all in. I guess they don't have as much of a tight, like, comments detrimental policy as NASCAR does, where if you even so much as talk about the charter negotiations now, you are in big, big trouble.
I did see, like, during that last weekend in Darlington, that someone from 2311 had a piece of paper taped to his back saying, "Please don't ask me about the charter," crying emoji.
If I say anything, they might take it away.
Kind of says it.
I do find it funny that, like, of them. The whole thing about Connor Daly being a product name searcher started because someone was just like, "Bro, why does Connor Daly keep getting jobs?" And this performance is just like, well, that's kind of the reason why. Because occasionally he will turn up a performance that blows the leader's circle relegation race wide freaking open.
To put into perspective, Christian Rasmussen had a really good day in race one. He finished in 11th place, the best result he's had on an oval so far in this championship since he got here as a part-timer last year. Really good day on paper. That would be a fantastic leader's circle day. Connor Daly was third and put 16 points on him in the leader's circle race, and that 11th all of a sudden feels like a 20th. Poor man. poor man. How bitterly unlucky have you got to be? It's like that scene last year when New Garden wins in Iowa, turns around, sees Pelot finishing third, and looks like Dwight out of The Office. It's just like, oh no. Because hey, Summer. Guess it. Hey, Cam, guess who was fifth in this race? Guess, go on. Who was it?
The floor, Alex Pelot.
By the way,
was fine during the race, but just methodically worked his way up and lost minimal points.
It also helps that, you know, accidents just don't happen to Alex Pelot that often. Like, he is the first man behind Marcus Ericsson and Joseph Newgarden taking each other out in turn one.
Yeah, say RJ, they happen in front of him all the time. He just doesn't get caught up in them.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I did have my eyes directly on that battle when Ericsson sailed it off into turn one. I thought before they even got to the corner, oh no.
I immediately thought, hang on a minute, Newgarden's bullish on ovals at the best of times. Marcus Ericsson has never seen a side-by-side he hasn't hit somebody with. And guess what happened? They hit each other, and Marcus Ericsson spins out and puts Newgarden in the wall.
Yeah. Oh.
Again,
most predictable incident.
You just knew when you watched it in real time what that was about to happen. Is this one of those ones where you just know, and then caution. Oh, dear. And they were surprisingly diplomatic about it afterwards by Newgarden standards. But, Newgarden's terrible, awful, no good besides the 500 season continues. But thankfully, tomorrow he would get a second chance to atone for what had happened. Anyway, race two.
You know how we were talking about like drivers who were like stars of the turn of the century? Well, just from what I had seen of this race, because I couldn't actually watch it again, locked into work, we brought elements of the turn of the century back, specifically the 2000 season finale of Fontana and that attrition. Oh boy, that mechanical and sometimes
I need to tell a story.
Go on, Cam.
In the car, in the front seat, next to Christopher DeHardy, we're talking about the championship. And I'm going, man, I just think Pelot's floor is too high. It's just they're not going to be able to take enough points out of him. And right next to me, Chris says, I don't know, I think something's going to happen to him and it's going to close up the gap.
Oh no.
I want him dead.
So you're telling me DeHardy accidentally but very accurately nailed your man's.
He jinxed my man's, and the next time I see him, which hopefully should be for next year's Indy 500, I'm going to plant my foot firmly between his lungs and colon.
Yeah, because we were watching this race and just getting ready. You know, the command has happened. Engines have been fired up. We're waiting for the cars to leave pit lane and get bunched up for the formation lap. And oh my God, Alex Pelot's car's not moving.
Me sitting in the stands with an Alex Pelot team shirt and an Alex Pelot hat on.
Mm-hmm.
I felt every emotion. The entire gamut of emotions, all in the space of about 30 seconds.
I cannot begin to imagine what was going through your brain when that was happening, because I was like, holy shit.
This is Chris DeHardy's head being shoved through a desk fan. Oh, my God.
Just like that, the championship battle gets blown wide open. Alex Pelot's car does not get going. Leaving pit road, they have a look at the power unit. They can't get it going. They have to wheel him back to the garage. If we've already done five laps under caution, because obviously the safety truck is on the tracks, obviously they can't go green and get started while that's going on. So they've had to wheel Pelot's car back to the garage. I turned down, King, I think it was a drained battery in the end.
Yeah. So what had happened was, there was a mysterious electrical issue. They don't know what that issue is still. Mm. But basically, to reset the car, they completely drain the hybrid system. to reset the car and then recharge it, but it didn't fix the electrical issue. And at that point, they realized that the car's battery, the 12 volt battery in the car, was damaged. And that's when they wheeled it back to the garage to replace it.
And in all that time, they did eventually fix it and they did get his car going again. But by that point, Palou had lost 28 laps on track. So now look, IndyCar has a very unique scoring system. You get 5 points just for showing up, which is useful. And they just sent him out there and told him to run laps. It was every car he could pick off, mostly via DNFs, gremlins, crashes, whatever. It's an extra point, you know, and these things do matter. Remember 2015 when Scott Dixon had his car not work in Texas? He was 45 or so laps down. They got him going again, got a couple of extra points just by running laps, and it was a championship that, if you remember how it ended, Dixon won on count back. Yeah, well, these things do matter.
Yeah, and that pretty much is where my mentality went as a Palou fan, is all right. Just get the car out and run laps. Also incredible to hear on the commentary as Alex Palou is running through the garage back to his car. On the comms, someone says, it's like Alex Palou will stop at nothing to win this championship, as he stops to grab a water.
Because you have to have water if you want to be the champion.
Bang! Very good. Very good. Also, I did look on the TV broadcast. He ran like Homer Simpson in a dream sequence where he's just skipping. Yeah. Trying to get back to the garage. It was beautiful. It's the most Alex Palou thing you could possibly imagine. Anyway. Let's get this race started. Oh my God, New Garden's in a catch fence.
Dear God. Well, there's a new restart line rule this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to one Joseph Newgarden and the...
You're welcome. I'm glad we found $100 solution for a multi-million.
We are welcome. We are welcome. Okay.
Apparently.
Well, Joseph is on pole. They're coming to the line, and they're not really formed up all that well, so they wave off the restart, and Linus Lundqvist did not get the memo.
No. Yeah. The man himself, the victim, Newgarden, said that to describe the situation, not only after the race, but also on his social media afterwards, must have had to manage to carefully curate those comments, to say someone didn't get the memo. Because Lundqvist taps his teammate, Marcus Armstrong, who was starting third, I think his best ever start in IndyCar, still starting third in the race, taps him, he goes round, he hits the front of the back of Joseph Newgarden's car, he loses it, and he puts his front nose in the fence. Armstrong and Newgarden's done his day immediately, and Alex Palou gets 2 points for free.
Whoops. Easy money.
RJ, what's up with your man? What's up with this damn restart? I need answers, because you defended this. You were out here like, this start wasn't cranky at all, and then IndyCar immediately puts in a restart rule one race later. What are we doing here?
Can I just say, like, and thanks to Nathan Brown for posing this, like, you shouldn't have a yellow flag waving from the stand and an LED light flashing green, which is probably coming through on the steering wheel.
That ended up not being the case, thanks to footage from IndyCar.
Yeah. Okay, yes.
There was further photographic evidence.
Yeah, there was a bit of an argument during the press. Well, it was a little spat between Jenna and Dave first in the press conference. Like, it quickly got headed off where, one side was adamant that, but the board, and Dave was like, wait, we have footage to show that he, in fact, did not see a yellow, like, he did not see a green board.
Oh. So, yeah, when you've got flags and lights
no,
are
no,
always...
That was not the problem. He just didn't pay attention.
Yeah, like, by the time that the incident begins to occur, it's yellow across the board, flags and lights. He just fucked up.
Whoops. Oh, dear. And, yeah, this is another one of those. Oh, good. Another restart disaster. 2 in 2 weeks, as you do. 27 of the best professional race car drivers in the planet, and Linus Lindqvist screws the pooch. Oh, but hey, that didn't really matter in the end. One, his car was ultimately fine until the end of the race, and two, he just sealed Rookie of the Year. So congratulations to Linus Lindqvist for winning one of the series major honors. Good for him, as you do. So, yeah, that was startling, to say the least. We finally did get going again after that. We had like 80 whole laps of green flag running. You know, we had McLaughlin. Lindqvist was actually leading this race for a good few laps as well. Like he actually got to the front, would overtake McLaughlin, and was leading for several. I think he led something like
that. Was race
19
one.
Laps.
That was race one.
Oh, was it race one? Was it race one? Yeah.
Yes, that was race one.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I had the wrong PDF in front of me. My bad. That'll get left on the cutting room floor. it was a Penske fest at the front on this one, most definitely. Newgarden, McLaughlin, and Power. Post Newgarden after the incident, of course. McLaughlin and Power were going back and forth up for a good chunk of this. Until David Malukas's car died on lap 63.
There were a lot of car deaths. Nolan Siegel, Pat O'Rourke does not sweep the weekend, which I was just like, man.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, a bunch of McLaren and McLaren-associated gearbox failures.
Two of them.
I guess we could count David Malukas as McLaren-associated. I mean,
his was an electrical fault.
You could still buy a David Malukas jersey in the IndyCar merch stand if you're that way inclined.
If you go to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway gift shop, you too can buy a David Malukas car.
Oh, yes.
Brutal.
See, I think going through the attrition list, Malukas was the only one who had a definite hybrid failure. Pelot, still we don't know, but it could be, and then all the Chevys were transmission problems.
Yeah,
because like everywhere. What Dixon had kind of mentioned after the race, and we saw this not in IndyCar, but actually in IMSA with their own spec hybrid system, and totally not an IndyCar engine repackaged into an Acura prototype. Remember when the 10 broke in? Remember when the 10 broke at Daytona this year?
I do.
Yeah, because that occurred because the hybrid system basically sucked all the power out of the rest of the car when it failed.
Oh.
And while it wasn't the hybrid energy store on Pelot's car, there's a much higher than 0% chance that that electrical fault was something to do with the hybrid.
Brutal. It did not only helped Pelot's cause when, as we mentioned earlier, Graham Rahal backs out of the middle of a free wide. Unfortunately, he checks up right in front of Christian Rasmussen. He can't react in time. Rasmussen drives into the back of him. Rahal ends up in the wall, and we got this hilarious scene where Graham Rahal is out of his car, points to his head, and immediately does the most lavish finger point as Rasmussen's car, like Hulk Hogan, is no-selling and starting his comeback in WCW again.
He was just telling them that he was number one.
He was just telling them, that doesn't work for me, brother.
Well, you know, in all this, the title hangs in the balance.
Yeah.
There is actually points where Will Power was leading this championship by a handful of points.
Yep.
And then
After the...
Coming
off that restart, Will Power at turn four spins on it under his own volition, spins out, gives the wall the lightest of taps, gets away with it, but has to get his front wing changed when the pits open up anyway. But Power spins out on his own on a restart. Another caution has to come out, obviously, and he loses a lap to the leading group.
Will, you know, what have you done? He was during that restart, he just thought, you know, increase my rent. That's how much I believe in the grind. He didn't want to take the easy win on Pelot. He didn't want to take the easy championship lead coming into Nashville.
To be fair, it would be the most willpower thing. So instead of going, let me just take this easy 35, maybe 40 points for a podium finish and, you know, really put the pressure on Palou going into Nashville. Now I'm a spin out. I'm going to make this comeback look so good in Nashville.
Oh, my 21. God.
Give it 21, baby.
And round he goes. And that Palou and then Power.
Just trap the lap down.
Trapped a lap down. He did get his lap back in the end, right at the end of the race. He got the wave around, but could only recover up to 10th place. And, well, after all the other gremlins that came through picture, Fittipaldi had a mechanical problem. Linus Lundqvist had brake disc damage after he grazed the wall late on. And Chip Ganassi very conveniently left him parked in the garage for the rest of the race for one extra position for Palou. He would ultimately finish in 19th. Funnily enough, Stingray Rob had crashed earlier on as well. If the race was one lap longer, Palou would have gotten him too. They finished on the same lap, but Palou was behind on track. So ultimately, it was P19 for Alex Palou with Power in P10. We'll break down the permutations on that in just a moment. But at the front of the field, hang on a minute. What's Scott Dixon doing up there?
Yeah, he can't win his seventh title this time out, but he can still remind you that he's Scott Dixon, the man who now has 400 career IndyCar starts.
400.
The man who has more podiums, I believe, than any driver in the history of the sport.
Yep. 142nd career podium finish for Scott Dixon. 142. Which is just terrifying to me. Dixon, who, by the way, was pretty much nowhere all weekend. Qualified middle of the pack, didn't have anything special in terms of outright speed. And next thing you know, he's hassling McLaughlin, who's been probably the strongest dude here all weekend for the win. Only ends up 0.4 behind over the line. But McLaughlin takes his third win of the year, his second oval win of the year. And congratulations, McLaughlin, you are the official Oval King of IndyCar this season. If we're looking purely at oval points, no one can catch McLaughlin in the oval standings. He has 65 points on anybody else in IndyCar on ovals this year. McLaughlin has all of a sudden magically become maybe the best oval runner in IndyCar. Funny how
it's the thing. It's the thing I noticed during his rookie year. Like on road and street courses, he was still like very much a work in progress, but on short ovals, he was a top five finisher. Like it was the first thing that he really found success in.
100%. Yeah, McLaughlin. Yeah, for those who are curious, McLaughlin, 254 of his points have come on ovals this year. Newgarden is second on that list, despite the disaster of what weekend he had in Nashville. In Milwaukee, 185 in second. Dixon third, because of course Dixon is on 180. Panama Warden 178. Ferrucci 162, then it's Power on 157, Palou on 154. Rinus VK, by the way, is ninth on that list. I had to double check this to check my maths on this, but Rinus VK very quietly has had 5 top tens in his last 7 races, which I thought was, it's a nice surprise.
Putting ECR on his back.
Boost my free agent value, buddy.
The Ed Carpenter paradox, everybody, as you do. But also, shout out to Colton Herta, who did come back well. Bless him, he tried that long run strategy at the end to try and get a win, because if he won, he'd have only been 47 points back, which would have given him a very slim chance of still being able to win the championship. Wasn't to be. He would ultimately finish third. Still Colton Herta's first ever podium on an oval track, believe it or not. Also, so a couple of other mentions. Santino Ferrucci, pair of fourth places on the weekend. That man was dive bombing and drift tapping shit out of people. Yeah. He can't keep getting away with it. He can't keep getting away with this. He's just too good. Right. So, with all that in mind, the scores on the doors. Alex Palou has a 33-point lead going into the title decider next weekend in Nashville. Now, I've crunched some numbers. RJ has too. Simply put, the easiest way I can describe is ninth place in Nashville guarantees Palou the title, whatever willpower does. And that's assuming willpower gets every of the points available. Because those who don't know, in IndyCar, it's 50 points for a win. It goes 50, 40, 35, 32, 30, minus 2 down to 10th at 20 points, and then minus 1 down to 25th or lower with a minimum of 5. Just that's the easy way I can explain it. So even if Power cleans house, which is the 50 points for the win, the bonus point for the P1 award for pole position, the extra point for leading a lap, and then the 2 bonus points for leading every single lap, Pillow would only have to finish 9th in order to do that. Power has to get on the podium point blank to have any chance at all of winning the title. And bad news, McLaughlin fans, unfortunately, even though you are still 50 points back and technically eligible the moment Pillow starts the race, unless he gets Tonya Hardened, the moment the race starts, McLaughlin's out of contention.
Don't give him any ideas.
He is the sort of sicker that would probably try something like that. Just for the attorneys, that's a joke. I promise. This is satire. McLaughlin would find it funny, honest. But McLaughlin will be eliminated from contention the moment Pillow takes the start, unfortunately, because the maximum points you can gain on anybody in IndyCar is 49, and McLaughlin is back by 50. So in other words, gents, it's going to be a long shot for Will Power, but this is Will Power. He can win any race at will, right? Pardon the pun.
The problem is that he had this one in the palm of his hands, and he decided to Kobe that shit from the logo right into the trash. I mean, realistically, he needs Pillow to have a repeat of this. Because, like, even this, where he got the biggest gift he ever could,
He only gained 11 points out of all of this. And 10 points, I should say, because I was looking at the wrong line. 10 points, it's still not enough. He was leading the championship at the time that he was leading the race. We should be going in basically practically dead level. Winner take all scenario.
Big, big race we don't speak about vibes.
Oh, yeah. Whoa. Race that shall not be named, etc. That was
my sentiment. Not the actual race, just the gif.
The actual sentiment. Yeah, just the idea of Power could have turned this into a basic glorified shootout in Nashville. Instead, he now needs a miracle, because Pillow has been virtually perfect in when it comes to consistency all year long. I mean, outside of the Iowa crash of his own making and this race 2 incident, which of course was not his fault, and then Detroit, which was Newgarden collecting him, he's not finished a race outside of the top 5 all season. He's just been that good. He's not, even when he's not been perfect and won a race, he's given his rivals virtually no room to breathe all season long. He's never really opened the door to be punished like that, because people keep tripping over each other trying to chase him down. And now it's one-on-one. Now it's just Power, and he needs a 34-point swing to win this. And that's not likely. You don't do that in IndyCar. IndyCar's not built to do something like that.
You don't do it on Pillow, because other than this mechanical and incident, an incident that wasn't his fault, when he's finished in the top 5.
Yeah.
The floor is too damn high. It was because I saw him after the race. That's when I got my car signed. And he's like, I wish I was catching you on a better day. He's like, yeah. Still smiling through it, though. He posts on Instagram afterwards. I'm like, could have been worse.
Nah, he's just like me, for real.
That's the funny thing about it. He was scrambling back to the garage, talking to Barry Wonser, his race strategist, in that race 2 incident, figuring out, can we get the car going? And he's still smiling. He's still smiling away, even though he's in the heat of the moment. His race has been derailed. His championship's been derailed. He's still smiling. I said it on Twitter, and I will say it again here. If you don't like Alex Pillow, you are the problem. Unless he's Zach Brown, in which case,
you are definitely the problem.
But are you giving Zach Brown the benefit of the doubt? Because I sure as hell ain't. But no. Overall, that's the title scenario situation. As we mentioned earlier, Linus Sundqvist has already sealed Rookie of the Year, so congrats to him. On that one, I do sincerely hope he's on this grid next year. I know Chip Ganassi is downsizing. He's in a tight fight with him and Marcus Armstrong and Tiffin Simpson. Chip's only going to be able to keep one of them with this new charter system. Maybe the second seat at Mayor Shank opens up for Lundqvist again, like how he got into the series. Maybe we'll have to see. Fingers crossed. I really hope.
MSR second seat. Mm. Let's talk about the other big battle that's going to be of note in Nashville, the Leader Circle relegation battle, because we don't get many good relegation battles in the Prem anymore, but we get them in the race for the Leader Circle in IndyCar, because I worked out that there are roughly four cars that are above the cut line that could realistically be caught. Yokosuka 78, Connor Daly on 189, Meyer Shanks 166, that's the Malukas car on 187. The number 30, Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan, Garve, Fittipaldi on 177. And on the bubble, the 441 of Sting, Ray, Rob on 175. One point above safety to the ECR 20, which we know will be driven by Christian Rasmussen and not Ed Carpenter on 174. Both DCR cars are still in it, but realistically, Jack Harvey needs to win the race, and I don't think that's happening. Kathleen Legg is 15 points behind safety. She did have her best weekend. I don't think a repeat performance is going to be enough to get the 51 car above the cut line.
Yeah, I think realistically in this battle, we're talking about the two cars just above. Well, the one car just above and the one car just below the line, because Daly's performance, like, that Yunko's car was really in danger. Then Connor Daly got that podium, and then no more problems.
I don't know about Fittipaldi sitting just 2-3 points above safety, though.
Yeah, you know, like, we talked about RLL's plight on ovals for a couple of years now, because really, since Sato's 500, they have been almost unwatchable.
Sato was the only watchable part of the 500 effort this year.
Yeah, I know.
Pretty much. Like
seeing those cars in person and just their difficulty getting around the turns, it's actually startling to see it in person versus TV. I mean, King, correct me if I'm wrong, was it Pietro's qualifying time for one of the races that would only be about a mile per hour up on Louis Foster's Indy Next pole time?
Yep.
It was that bad. Clinching Indy Next pole time, by the way. Yeah. Congratulations to Louis Foster.
That's almost inconceivable given the performance gap in the cars inherently.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Go, Andre, clap it up for your favorite 41-year-old looking 21-year-old prospect. don't get me wrong, though. Louis Foster's had a great season, and at least there is a prospect that he will be on the grid, potentially with a full-time ride. Watch the space.
Fingers crossed, because I've been pulling for Louis Foster for a good year now. I said it at the end of last season. I thought he was good enough to be in IndyCar. He has completely dominated this championship in IndyNext this year. Won again in Milwaukee to over Jacob Abel to win the title. Seventh win of the year. Hasn't finished off the top two since May. He's been sensational all year long. One of the better IndyNext light seasons in recent memory. Sincerely really hope it's a full-time drive for him, because look, I'm from Britain, and only one driver in Indy Next from Britain gets all the attention and hype, and I'll give you a hint, it's not Louis Foster. See if you can work out who I'm talking about. But
word on the street, only one of them's getting a full-time ride next year.
I'll drink to that. But just a quick circle back to the Leader Circle relegation fight. Given the Stingray Rob has not been anywhere near as dreadful this year as he was last year. He is still wrecking the odd car in there, which is not ideal. Fittipaldi has been so bad on ovals with RNL this year, and the fact that the decider is an oval is doing him no favors here. I've got a feeling Fittipaldi would be the one that doesn't make it. I think Daly and Malukas are safe. I think it would take like
some horrible luck on either of their parts. But the thing is, like, Malukas has had that. He's had rocket ships.
But the difference is, Malukas on a short oval, we know, is incredibly fast. That's the one thing we know he's really good at. If his car stays healthy, Malukas will be in the mix for a top 10. Minimum.
That's the question mark here.
That is the question mark, but I've got more faith in that than Fittipaldi. So I think Daly and Malukas are safe. That, like, honestly, that Daly podium might be worth over $1 million to Ricardo Juncos.
That's $1 million podium.
Yeah. Like, you could see there wasn't a dry eye in the Juncos garage after that first race, and for good reasons. Like, you can all the money.
Oh, he got a huge hug from Ricardo Juncos, and then his mom.
His mom was like, "Come here, boy." It was genuinely very sweet, and you could see how grateful they were to Daly for that one. He's done an exceptional job filling in for Canapino at short notice and doing what we've nicknamed him, the driver for hire, does best. Bring that shit home. And I think Daly's there. I think that's $1 million+ for Juncos for getting both cars in the circle again, which is huge. I think Malukas will get there. I'm worried for Fittipaldi, is what I will say.
I got to witness those cars firsthand. Mm-mm. Fittipaldi's screwed.
Oh, I have more faith in Rasmussen round an oval. I might even have more faith in Rob, because at least the Foyts aren't slow on ovals. I think Fittipaldi's the one in serious trouble here. I really do. You better hope and pray to God that, and going Stingray Robbie's probably already beaten him to the punch on that one. I've got
low-hanging fruit.
Too easy, I know. You better pray to his God, FP1 Will, on YouTube, that something happens to Rob. Hopefully nothing terrible, but of course, an early bath or something along those lines. Otherwise, I think Fittipaldi will probably be the one that misses out. We will have to wait and see. Before we go, gents, any chance of a power miracle? Are we all just saying it's Palou's to lose here? Because I think that's
always
the vibe.
A chance. There's always a chance, but I don't think it's big enough. I'm gonna say the preamble of what this third championship would mean for Alex Palou, if and when that we get to that across that bridge.
It's a generational run. Three title wins in 4 years. One of the greatest IndyCar seasons we've ever seen in the last year. 3 and 4 would be unprecedented. I mean, what? Who was the last guy to retain the Aster Cup? Was it Dario? Or was it somebody else?
Oh, the last back-to-back champion.
It was Dario. Thanks, Ed, in the chat. I knew Ed would know.
the heir to the 10 car in every sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope that the Chip Ganassi engineers and mechanics don't
double
forget,
check the battery.
Double check everything. Triple check everything.
Yeah.
Because that, sure, I think, is the only thing that could possibly cost Palou this title. Even if he has a bad weekend in Nashville, realistically, like, he needs to have his worst weekend of the year on pace in order to do it.
And the pace with Palou has not been the problem all year long. Hasn't been a problem.
As we said, the oval rating is only a 92 instead of a 98.
He's seventh in the league on ovals this year. He's been absolutely fine on ovals this year, and two of those three bad
efficiency.
Yeah, one of those two bad days wasn't even his fault, which just kind of says it all. Palou doesn't really have a weakness at this point, which is just terrifying for anybody else involved in the field. But hey, maybe willpower can pull off one last huge miracle. Either way, Ed, one of your boys is winning. It's either the puppy or the puppy with the knife. We'll find out.
The puppy with the knife or the smiling Spanish assassin.
Who knows? Or as Townsend would say, the professor of precision. Cringe. IndyCar season finale will be next weekend from Nashville Super Speedway. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time, IndyCar wise, to talk about that one. Good luck to both men. I hope it's a good, clean fight. Don't forget, no eye gouging, no shots below the waist, and no punches to the kidneys. We will see how that goes. Before we get out of here, basically, you can find us. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. customers for one of Elon Musk's failed and often losing in court business investment at Motorsport underscore 101. If you'd like to follow us personally, you can at Dre Harrison 101, at RJ O'Connell, at C Buckley 917. And of course, you can follow Ryan Eric King at Ryan Eric King. That's with two K's in it. And of course, you can check out all his work on Jalopnik as well. Thanks for manning the Instagram account, by the way, King. Good pictures, good pictures. I'm gutted he missed out on more cream puff action. that would have been on brand.
Oh, we saw enough.
We had enough to get an idea.
I say, there's a great picture, because if you didn't know this, Will Power is lactose intolerant.
Oh, no.
And he's looking at this cream puff going, I'm making a business decision.
I'm chucking it at somebody's head.
Yeah, apparently McLaughlin got double teamed in race two, and I thought that was hilarious. Just a
absolutely
good joke,
really. Got.
Oh, wait, yeah.
Don't
yeah.
search up cream puff double teaming.
No. You'll see, you could back us fine actually on Patreon, which I don't know why you would do that after that last sentence. Patreon.com/motorsport101. You can follow us on there as well. You can back us there. You can back us at any level. You can get the occasional DRR post early from yours truly. $5 that you earn access to everything we put out, including all of our episodes as well. And the $10 level, can get you access to the supporters club of our Discord server, and you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Kira, Edwin, Jason, and Vic have all done tonight. Thank you so much for listening in and supporting us as ever. And of course, you can get all those details, all our social media, and some extra written content from yours truly if you want over 3,000 words on what I thought of Milwaukee's weekend as a whole, as well as reviews on Formula One at Monza, which we'll be talking about next episode, and MotoGP at Aragon. Apparently some ant guy won over there on the website blog section, motorsport101.com/blog. Check that out if you haven't already. We'll be back to talk about Formula One at the Italian Grand Prix at Monza. And wait, that's a Tifosi I hear in the background. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Ryan Eric King, RJ O'Connell, and Cameron Buckley. Until next time, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
Honda, please don't leave. Your food's great.
Ha ha ha!